On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
You know, I think it's pretty obvious that this president guy that we have, this Trump thing, this thing known as the Trump thing, he doesn't really want to be president. I mean, he loves the power and all that, but he's like, he's just like really sick of that. He loves to be a stand-up comedian. That's what he really wants, a powerful stand-up comedian. That's what he wants. And you can tell when he does his rallies. Who does rallies? You got the job. Chill. When he does his rallies, he does stand-up comedy routines. Who does this? You're supposed to be the president. You're not Jerry Seinfeld. But that's what he does. He talks about like I do. He talks about subjects, and then the audience or the rally people, they laugh at him because their heads are so far up his ass, they can't do anything but laugh. I can give you an example. This happened just a day or so ago at a Wisconsin rally, of all places. Trump was addressing, of course, his lovers. and this is what I did not make this up. This was not fabricating. This is a piece of the Wisconsin rally just a day or so ago.
I brought back the old light bulb. Better light for much less money if you want it, right? Little thing. Somebody said, oh, sir, don't mention the light bulb. You know, it's hard to make an elegant speech. I'm saying I brought back the light bulb. So the new light bulb costs you 5 times as much, and it makes you look orange. And I was more interested in the orange than I was in the cost. But I'm also approving new dishwashers that give you more water so you can actually wash and rinse your dishes without having to do it 10 times. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Anybody have a new dishwasher? I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry for that. It's worthless. We won't talk about toilets, but you know that's a 10, 15, but we don't talk about that. Because I've said this 3 or 4 times, the only subject they ever talk about is toilets, so I don't mention toilets. But how about the shower? You go into a shower, and I have this beautiful head of hair. I need a lot of water.
Oh, my God.
Good morning. Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh my God, did he just do my stand-up comedy routine from 1986? He stole my routine. Donald, I don't think you've ever run a dishwasher. I believe you flushed a toilet. I would get a repair person to fix your toilet because it's not flushing properly. I don't know anybody who has run their dishwasher 9, 10, 11, 12 times to get the dishes clean. Once works for me. Don, I think you've got some faulty appliances in your palace. This is why nobody should stay at any of Don's resorts. Apparently the plumbing doesn't work at his places. Don't go to Mar-a-Lago. The toilet won't flush. I thought bed bugs was the only problem. Apparently, the plumbing sucks. He's very proud that he brought back the light bulb. Whoa. I don't know what to do about this. I'm scared. You ever go into a room in your house and you flip the switch to turn the lights on and the lights don't go on? And you flip it a second time, the lights don't go on. And a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth, and a seventh, and an eighth time, and the lights still don't go on. Yeah, it's a problem. So Don went back to the old light bulb, and now you flick the switch. Those new light bulbs just don't turn on at all. What the fuck is wrong with this guy? Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm not president, so I can do a comedy routine. This is crazy, man. This is just nuts. What the hell happened now? This man is turning my world upside down. Anyway, welcome to the program. I'm Ron Van Dam. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I like cheese, boating, canoeing, zip lining. Jumping out of planes without parachutes. I'm an adventurist. I've scaled Mount Everest 7, 8, 9, 10 times. You keep scaling the thing, and it's just awful. I do rock climbing for no reason whatsoever. I paint my toenails purple just in case I'm in an accident. I can make the paramedics talk about something on the way to the hospital. Did you see this guy's toenails? They're purple. I know. Anyway, that's a little background on me. I'm size 11 and a half shoe. I like to bowl, but I'm embarrassed about it. There is a thrill about throwing a ball, a big hard ball, down an alley, down a long, hardwood road. I just don't want anybody to see me doing it. I feel like if I go bowling, I have to drink beer. It's a requirement. Otherwise, someone will come over and kill you. I've said this before. The only reason I really love bowling is because the ball comes back to me automatically. It's the only sport in the world where the ball is automatically returned. You don't have to go chasing it. I find that to be paramount. I don't really, care for bowling. I see other people bowl, and they look a little weird doing it. They dress very, very oddly. They wear those bowling shirts. Ooh, who invented that? And why didn't they ever change? What's up with the bowling shirt? Seriously? There was a time, and some people still do it, but about 10, 15 years ago, some of you millennials don't know what that is, they wore bowling shirts all over the place. Everybody wore a bowling shirt. Do you ever watch the show Two and a Half Men? Yeah, bowling shirts. It's just, I don't know, it was a thing. It was a thing at that point. So I don't like to bowl because someone might see me bowling and that would just be really embarrassing. What are you wearing, by the way?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
There was a time, about 1990, something like that, maybe a little bit earlier. Again, you millennials, you don't understand. There was a time before the turn of the century where people actually roamed the earth with the dinosaurs. This is about 1990. People were wearing bowling shirts out in public, a very, very strange fad, a very, very strange look. It was like couture by Brunswick. There were also people walking around wearing a surgical garb. Yeah, the kind that surgeons wear, when they're doing surgery. It was like a hospital green or bluish kind of top, and it was the thing that surgeons wear. And they used to walk around as they weren't surgeons. They were just dressed like surgeons, and they used to walk around like that, and that was a fashion. I know. It's very similar now. So you don't understand how stupid you look wearing a sports uniform. Well, if you have your favorite football team or baseball team and you wear their number on your, you know, you're wearing one of their jerseys, you know, as if you're a baseball player or you're a football player on your favorite team, and you actually go out in public and you display that, you don't understand basically how ridiculous you actually look. You look like a 10-year-old child who should be confined to some type of mental institute. It's very, very strange look. When you dress like a football player and you walk out in public, I'm telling you, I stare at you and I say to myself, this person thinks that they're actually that player. They're wearing a jersey with a big 12 on it. These people think they're Tom Brady of the New England Patriots, but they're not. But they dress in his clothes. They broke into his house while he was playing football one Sunday and took all his tops. And now they're wearing it. Do you know how sophomoric you look wearing somebody's sports jersey out in public? Sure, if you're at Walmart, it fits in, but otherwise, it's ridiculous. You wouldn't go to church wearing a Tom Brady jersey, would you? Or would you? Well, I would because God wants me to. Wow. See, these are indications that there's something wrong. But if everybody does it in society, or a good number of people, you feel normal. It's not normal. There's something wrong with you. Don't wear football jerseys out in public. That doesn't make sense. You don't play football. That's not you. What are you doing? Don't wear surgeon's uniforms out in public. You're not a surgeon. What's wrong with you? Bowling shirts? I mean, that's just poor choices. That's not having a concept of the way you actually look. Do you own a mirror? Do you find that to be fashionable? Seriously? I'm sorry.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today?
Getting back to Donald Trump. Listen to his rallies sometimes, just for fun, to his stand-up comedy routines. See, the president doesn't do anything presidential. He spends most of the day in the Oval Office with the doors locked, and you know what he's doing behind the desk. I don't have to tell you that. The cleaning lady will tell you. Monica Lewinsky's dress? Got nothing on this guy. He sits behind the desk in the Oval Office, and he writes notes for his next rally. He writes comedy routine material, which isn't funny. He's stolen it from my acts back from the 80s when I used to do stand-up comedy. That was my bit. I should sue him. What's wrong with this man? Don't you understand there's a mental illness involved? One that can't even be tagged. They didn't even diagnose this yet. It's some type of complex where you think you rule the world. And you're Jerry Seinfeld. It's very, very odd. But it works, you see, because when you're the president, people will, you know, engage you accordingly. So if you do a stand-up routine in front of a couple of thousand people in an auditorium in Wisconsin, and they laugh at everything you say because you're so fucking funny, then that's an ego boost for a seasoned performer like Donald Trump. A seasoned performer. The guy was on The Apprentice, sat behind a big conference table and told people what to do and then fired them at the end. What kind of entertainer is this? What are you talking about? He was a guy who was in the real estate business. He didn't even build buildings. He bought buildings and put his name on it. He sold his naming rights to buildings that were already there half the time. He didn't build a building. He doesn't know how to build a building. He doesn't know how to build a wall. He gets a contractor and says, I'll give you $1 million, build me a building, put my name at the top. I'm going to lunch. This is, is it Thursday? Time to declare bankruptcy again. I mean, seriously, that's all. That's his father gave him like millions of dollars to start a business in Manhattan. He did, and went bankrupt shortly after. Here's what also bothers me about Trump's, Ron, get off of this subject. Is there something wrong? Oh, yes, there is something wrong. Oh, very much so. Listen to his speeches, his stand-up comedy routines, whatever the case may be, when he addresses the country or tweets or anything like that. He uses this phrase all the time, and it just shows what a liar this guy is. See, comedians lie. Comedians embellish the truth in order to set up the joke. They don't really know what they're doing. They didn't really do any of this stuff. They're just setting up the joke for you, so you have to embellish and lie. Believe me, I've been there. Here's the phrase that he uses all the time. Somebody said. This is the President of the United States giving credence to the phrase, somebody said. He stands up in front of the crowd at the rally, talks about the inefficiency of a dishwasher, and here's what he says. He says, somebody said that they have to run the dishwasher. Who said this? Who's the somebody said? Who? Give me names. If one person said it, Don, that makes it true. Now, sometimes he'll go a little bit further. Instead of saying somebody said, which is so ridiculous, he says, people are saying. People are saying. He's surrounded by yes men, by crowds that love him, find the taste of his behind to be like frosting on a cake. They just eat it up. People are saying. This is people are saying. These are the people are saying. And that's how the country is run. Now, I'm going to get off of his back for just a couple of minutes because I've talked about him far too long. It's just phenomenal to me that it's just phenomenal. Why aren't people in the streets every weekend? Because you work during the week. You can't be in the streets during the week. You're busy working. But on weekends, you got time. Why isn't the population of the United States in the street every single weekend just saying, get this guy out of office. There's something wrong with him. He's screwing everything up. He's making things worse. He's driving me crazy. He's driving me crazy. I don't want to hear his name. I don't want to hear his voice. I don't want to hear what he's saying. Just get him out of here. Remove him. Put a dead cat in the Oval Office. I don't care. Just get him out of here. Why aren't people doing that? Why are there not rallies in the streets? I don't want you to burn cars or anything like that or get violent, but at least do something about it. Stand there and say, get him out. This is crazy. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a citizen of the United States. Get this guy that locks up children out of here. Get this guy that makes up things and lies about it. Get him out of here. Get this guy who does who leads the country and the world according to his gut. And the guy's got gastrointestinal problems, quite obviously. Get him out of here. Get him out of here. There are no rallies for that. And the excuse is, well, we have an election coming up soon. Yeah, you can fuck up a lot of things in a couple of days. We almost went to war with Iran. Could still happen. We were teetering on that thing. All because of Don. Because the way Don handled something and didn't ask other people. Or if they did, he just follows the advice of other morons. I don't even know. Now I'm getting sick of talking about him. So we have a guest. You see, one of the reasons that people gather around Don Trump, I call him Don, is because he achieves some of the things that they want, or at least yells and screams and does comedy routines about it. And one of them is abortion. Now, I'm not going to get into this, whether you're pro-abortion or not, whether you're pro-life, you don't like life, you know, I'm against life, I'm pro-life. I mean, there's all things that are, you know, whatever. Yeah, okay. I know a lot of people have abortion, opinions because of religious reasons. I get that. You were brought up that way. You can't escape it. I understand. All right. So you vote for the guy, figuring, they're not going to abolish abortion. Don't worry about it, or worry about it, whatever the case may be. But people are still struggling, and states are making it very, very difficult for people, or not. So we're actually on this show going to talk about the abortion issue. I know. We're going to be doing that momentarily. I am a sophisticated person, I swear.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Refined entertainment for a sophisticated audience. Who sometimes enjoy a good fart joke?
Monica Simpson joins us. She's executive director of Sister Song Women of Color, Reproductive Justice Collective. That's a long title, Monica. must have an oblong business card. Okay. We're coming up on the anniversary of a very important subject and decision in our history. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. We are coming up on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And good morning to you, Ron. Thank you so much for having me today. Good. Yes, 47 years that we're celebrating here of this historic and very landmark case that made it possible for abortion to remain legal here in the United States of America. So it is a very important case for the work that we do as a National Reproductive Justice Collective. Mm-hmm. And it's important for folks to know that what Roe v. Wade is and what it has made possible for our communities for these 47 years, mm-hmm. but also what's at stake as we're continuing to move forward.
I'm a little bit confused. Maybe you can clear up the difference between federal and state policy. I know that mm-hmm. most states, it depends where the state is. Is this a federal decision that affects states? I'm confused about that. Which is upheld and why are they different?
Sure. So yes, Roe v. Wade is a federal policy, right? And, yeah. And how that impacts our states is that our states, of course, are that fall under that federal policy.
Yes.
And our states have the ability to, unfortunately, which has been the case now, especially over the past decade or so, we've seen how our states have been pushing forward different measures, different bills that have actually tried to chip away at this federal policy, right, that makes and pushes access out of reach for folks. And so although Roe v. Wade continues, and as we continue to fight, right, it continues to still be upheld as a federal policy, those states, because our states do have the ability to operate autonomously in some ways, have started to push, right, and in some ways at really chipping away at access as it pertains to the folks that live in their states around abortion access.
I can't understand, though, how Roe v. Wade abortion could actually how that could change, how you could actually go backwards and strike that precedent. It's threatened all the time, but I don't understand how that could ever be stopped.
You know, it's a crazy battle out here, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Ron, I tell you what we are seeing at the state level, you know, we're a 7-based national organization. And so unfortunately, when we think about all that's happening, you know, at our state houses and in this region in the South, and as we think about it all over this country, we are seeing so many different bills being pushed by politicians who have an agenda to really reverse Roe v. Wade and continue to chip away at it. Sure. And so we've seen abortion bans, which was a huge topic of conversation over this past legislative session across the country. We've seen so many other restrictions that really continue to just push access out of reach for folks. And so even though folks are like, well, Roe v. Wade can't go anywhere, that's not the best way to look at it, in our opinion. We have a Supreme Court that has now, you know, taken on a justice that has said very explicitly where he stands on these issues as it pertains to women's health and women's rights. And so we have to look at how all of these things are compounded against us and continue the collective resistance that we are, not only at the state level, but at the federal level, to make sure that abortion access remains legal and that access continues to be expanded and not decreased.
Certainly. What can a citizen do to get involved in that movement, to make their voice heard?
Absolutely. There's so much that folks can do. Our voices really matter. Our voices are our power, and it is exactly the thing that we need to be using at this time. I think it's really important for folks to understand the power that they have at their state houses. Our state representatives, our folks who are elected, need to hear from us. They need to hear from us, whether we're writing letters, whether we're sending emails, whether we're making phone calls. They need to see us as we are, you know, moving into our legislative sessions across this country. We need to be in the building. Our state houses are designed for us to enter them and not for us to be on the outside of them. And so that is like the most important thing that folks can do right now, is to use our voice and to put ourselves on the front line for these issues. Because one person is affected, all folks are affected by these issues.
Yeah.
It's also really important to get involved with those organizations in your community that's doing this work, right? Our organizations need volunteer support. They need financial support. We need to make sure that folks are just able to move in a fashion that's not always about just defending these issues, but also thinking about how we can move proactively against these issues as well. And what makes reproductive justice such a transformative movement and framework is that we are not only just focused on abortion access, because that is, we know it's absolutely important, but we also talk about those issues that surround this work. We talk about the expansion of Medicaid, because we know that that is absolutely crucial to folks making sure they have access to the adequate health care that they need. We talk about how our work intersects with economic justice issues, and people are able to have a livable wage, which allows them to create the families that they want and to be able to take care of themselves in the way that they need to. And it's also just important to think about environmental justice issues and how all those things are also directly connected to how people are making decisions about their reproductive lives. This work is so intersectional. So it's important for folks, whether you are doing this work directly around reproductive justice or whether you are committed to ensuring that folks have a livable wage, that we're all connected around these issues and pushing in all the ways that we can to let our lawmakers know, let our electeds know, let all those in power know that we are a collective united front against these issues.
I've never understood why in this country our citizens it's always a silent majority. I don't understand the silent word. In other countries, Europe, et cetera, across the world, when people want to make a point, they're out there. They're in the streets.
Yeah.
They're making their point. In this country, we just seem to wait until election time. Otherwise, we don't say a word as long as you get a check in the mail. I don't understand us sometimes. It's very frustrating. And it's as simple, as you stated, as to just email. I mean, how difficult is it to sit down and email something to make yourself known?
I think, you know, Ron, I think it's easy to do. I mean, this is also my life's work, right? So for me, sending an email or, you know, raising my fist in the air and walking, you know, marching down the street is exactly what I'm going to do. I also understand that, you know, folks have so much that they are dealing with in their lives. That's what we really try to take into account, you know, in the work that we do for reproductive justice. People are trying to raise families. People are trying to keep their families safe. Folks are trying to ensure that they're eating healthy and have, you know, safe drinking water, right? You know, it's not, we understand that folks are living in a world where there's so much that is, you know, compounded against them, and oppression is so real. And when we think about in this country in particular, and not to say it's not the case across the world, but with communities of color, whenever we do raise our voice, we have to understand that, you know, the systems that we are under and racism and yeah. all of that is just so real and blatant in this country that it really does, you know, I don't know, I don't believe it silences people. I think that folks have to really work through their fear of what it means to put themselves on the front lines for this work. And so that's why, you know, building, you know, powerful allies is so critical to this work that we're in, because we do know that racism is real in this country, and it right. really does impact the way that folks are able to really get into this movement's work. And so we also have to take that into consideration too, you know?
No, it impacts everything. I mean, you know, if you're in legal trouble, yeah. If, you know, if you're, it's completely unfair. I mean, if you're rich, you're out, you're good. If you're not, you're screwed. I could sit down and do 20 emails in 5 minutes and accomplish everything. Yeah. And I don't know why everybody else can't. You don't have to choose one platform. You can dish them out anyway. Okay. How do we do that? What do we do? How do we actually make ourselves known? Is there a website we can look at?
Absolutely. So at Sister Song, we try to make things very easy and accessible for folks, and we try to give as much information to, like, really get folks ready to be mm-hmm. able to organize and mobilize around these issues. Our website is sistersong.net, very easy. Again, sistersong.net. You can get so much information about what reproductive justice is, how we define that, how we're moving that. You can also find information on our website, especially if you're new to these issues and you want to figure out how do you even get started. We do reproductive justice training across this country all year long. And so you can reach in to our membership coordinator, who you can find on our website, to ask us about how we can come to your area to help you build your folks and to get ready to mobilize in these streets with us. We are a training and development hub. We're a national convener, and it is our role and our mission to make sure that everyone is equipped to really move on these issues. And through our website, you can also be connected to so many other amazing initiatives that are going on, and so many fights that you can get involved in from the federal level in particular, and hopefully down to your state. So hit us up and make sure that you are in the fight with us.
Yeah, let's make this year a resolution to, instead of being steamrolled, to drive the piece of machinery this time. Thank you so much for your time, Monica.
Thank you, Ron, so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it for today. Thanks for hanging in there. The Ron Van Dam Show can be heard on iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, YouTube, Podbean Network is our host, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, Podbay, just to name a few. We're all over the friggin' place. So please join us every day. It helps, helps me. I can eat. I can buy groceries. So I appreciate that. In the meantime, you know what? You're a nice person. You're nice. That's what Mr. Rogers would say at the end of his show. You know, you're a nice person. You're a good person. I like Mr. Rogers. He's no longer with us, but he's within my soul. Yes, this angry, grumpy talk show host inside is a soft, wonderful man. See what you can do with that. I wish you peace.